Welcome to the pod, man. Piero, thanks for making time for me today. You've got a crazy busy schedule coming up and you're like, hey, I'm going to be in Miami for a few hours. Let's do this thing. This is bright and early.
I'll tell you what, I'm loving it every second. So thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So we met about a week and a half ago. I've got someone on my team that basically irritates like a mosquito all the folks from YC who graduated in 2022. And then I look at the companies and I'm like, oh, wow, Piero has this interesting story. Basically, if you look at your LinkedIn, you go, this guy is a lifer in banking. This guy's going to be in banking forever. Kind of like if you look at my LinkedIn, you're like, he's never getting out alive. Is it UBS, Barclays? He's going to be here forever. And, you know, obviously you're on the show. You're an entrepreneur. You've launched Pana, which we're going to get into. But what moment, because you've been in banking for well over a decade. Yeah. So what moment do you say, I'm going to just abandon this probably badass salary at this point, this comfort, this career track? You've got a lot of friends, like you have a whole community there. When do you just say, I'm gonna just blow all that up and take a crazy bet and do something insane like Pana? Fill me in on what you guys are doing. Give me an idea of what the mission is too, because we didn't.
Yeah, so there's this huge problem. Unfortunately, it's not new. Mm-hmm. It's old news, which is banking has evolved in the U.S. for many folks, but that has not been the case for the Hispanic Latino cohort. It feels as if banking has been built for Latinos, but not by Latinos. Mm. This is, in part, one of the reasons why it is still one of the most underserved cohorts in America. And it's not a lack of money, by the way. In fact, U.S. Latinos were a country, we'd be the fifth largest GDP in the world.
Okay.
And we have a $1.7 trillion buying power just in the U.S.
Wow. Okay.
So when we come to the U.S., we as a team, my co-founder, we see a couple of things. Number one, that this is a huge problem that it's hard to believe it still is in 2021.
Because of the sheer size of the opportunity.
Right. Two, we see that we can actually do something about it just like we had done elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And three, it's like it is the moment to do it now because of some shift in generation, shift in technology, shift in the pandemic, shift in behavior. So many things lining up. I was talking at the beginning about perfect timing, how everything lined up. And that's when we decided to start Pana. Immediately, we got, backed by Y Combinator. Mm-hmm. We got into the Visa Fast Track program. We also got into Endeavor. It felt like this is happening. The momentum kicked in like from point zero.
Well, you're getting a lot of yeses and support from some of the smartest folks in town.
Right. And we said, well, we believe we have an insight on this, not only on the bank. We have the banking background. We have the technology background. But we have an insight in this huge diaspora, in this huge culture.
In a mindset insight.
Yeah. And we said, there's some things that we believe we know that some other people don't. That in tandem with the rest of the things we have, I think we have a pretty good playbook here. And that's how it started, right? That's how it started. We definitely saw how difficult it was to, I personally tried opening a bank account before I had my SSN.
Okay.
I'm not an underbanked. I have, a couple of great credit cards.
Yeah.
International platinum black cards.
Right, you're a successful guy.
And I came to the US and I tried opening a bank account or a credit card and it felt like the 1990s.
Right.
And I said, this cannot be true.
Right. So this was the first thing that you tried to solve, is opening a bank account without a social security number.
Correct.
This was challenge number one. Because I know you guys are doing a handful of different things.
Yeah, challenge number one. Challenge number two, you cannot believe how tough it is to send a simple transfer. I'll give you one example. My friend Paola from Guayma, Mexico, she does therapies online over Zoom since the pandemic. She has clients in the US. Every time someone wants to pay her, she's like, well, PayPal.
Yeah, then 3 to 5% fee,
it's
conversion
like,
fee.
Right, it's crazy. And they say, we can also solve that. So we tackle that as well.
Okay, so payments between LATAM and the US as well.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So we started fixing opening a bank account. We made it 10 times easier for
which is huge.
And it's just a bank account.
Right.
It shouldn't be a thing.
Right.
It shouldn't be a thing nowadays. But anyway.
Well, we live in Miami, too. You know, and this, you can't find a more, you know, Latino-based economy than Miami.
Right.
So you see, I mean, you just see it with your own two eyes. I mean, Miami is, I think it's 60% is Latino, right?
Yeah. It's
more Latino than anything else.
It's incredible, and it's happening also in Texas. It's happening in California. It's happening, you know, up north. So there's this thing stirring about this huge, and you can see it in the culture. You can see it in Bad Bunny being number one worldwide.
Right,
and you can see so many things stirring up. And I said, this is the time.
And yet you can't open a bank account. You can't transfer money.
And, you know, there's this thing, which is, I think, one of the biggest drivers that we said we believe we have an insight. And it was, there's this thing about the warm smile.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing about that music.
Mm.
There's this thing about the food. That's a song. There's this thing about making you feel like my brother, even though I just met you.
Okay.
There's this thing about making you feel at home, even if, you know, it's the first time you come over. And that's one quality that is in the DNA of every Latino worldwide. And we wanted to tap into that. And we said, this can be huge. Because historically, you have...
That's an emotional...
Yeah.
That's not a technical solver. No. That's an emotional brand, foundational tenet.
Yeah. And it turns out pana, which is means pal in English, in Spanish, is that single word that every Latino understands. I realized that Latinos do not identify it on their one single kind of like caucus or anything.
Right.
So, but there's something stirring, and we can connect those dots.
Yeah, that's really smart. I mean, even looking at, you know, the branding on your phone case and on the card, to me, there's some emotional energy into the branding that resonates with me, especially when I was going through your landing page. It has that warmth to it that other banking products just don't have. So I could feel that coming through the brand. And I think that's absolutely a brilliant move to pay attention to the emotional side of this.
And it was time to change the Latino from this migrant,
kind of like
story
put off to the side
to
or something like
aspirational.
That. Right.
So something lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
Again, let's go with Bad Bunny. Let's go with what's dude there. You know, there's something staring underneath the surface that we're tapping into that. And that will be huge.
That's interesting.
It's going to be huge. We believe we are building perhaps one of the biggest financial platforms in the U.S. for the coming 5 or 10 years.
Sure. And to me, that what's so interesting, though, is that you guys understood the emotional and branding side and the technical side, because the technical side is nothing, you know, it's not a small challenge, right, to do this at scale. What I see in my own experience, too, is I put the branding and emotional side on the side, and I get really pragmatic about solving the problem. But you've just shown me, like, you're like, hey, there is a cultural movement happening. It's not just a banking movement. Okay, it's a banking movement, but there's a cultural movement. So if we could combine these two, we create something like a rocket ship that's a vehicle for good. I mean, for value, really, but making it stickier. That's what the branding and the messaging, I think, has to do with.
I mean, the way we see it is, you know, finance is related to the economy. The economy is behavioral. Behavioral is obviously emotional.
Mm.
So it's completely, linked, intertwined one thing with the other. So you can catch up a wave and a trend when it's about to be a wave
paddling out there before the wave.
If you're seeing the wave already, you're too late, man.
Right.
So anyway, there's something stirring, and I believe we're ahead of we're catching that wave, and we're ahead of the game on that one, hopefully. But definitely, if there's something that drives us, is someone who is in the U.S. and, you know, wants to create a business and make a living and, you know, grow and eventually do an IPO, can we support that person in that person's journey all across?
From a simple bank account to a major opportunity, like an exit.
Exactly, like an exit. And for instance, if I come to the U.S. and I don't have a credit score, of course, because I'm new to the country.
Sure.
I have a, and then I have a thin credit score for a long time. Why? If I have a great credit score in Colombia, Mexico, Dominican Republic, Chile, Peru, why do I need to build from scratch? That shouldn't be a reality nowadays. So we've come up with ways to eventually provide, you know, immigrants with a way of just pack your credit score with your in your bag and bring it over. And it's a way of just obviously getting, tapping into that credit credit history and using that to underwrite you here for a credit product.
Right. And you have to do that all in-house because it's not transferable.
Exactly.
So you guys are saying, hey, we understand how the credit system works in X country.
Yeah.
We're going to translate that over here into the same parameters that we would calculate credit, and then we'll extend you credit.
Absolutely. There are a couple of things. Friends and families are Latino's biggest bank in the world.
Okay.
And that's one of the things, you know, in just in the US, they're moving $40 billion between each other.
Boom, boom, peer to peer. Boom, boom, boom.
So, you know, you need to understand that. Mm-hmm. And that's why our concept is around social banking. That's why we call it. Within the app, you even have a chat that you can actually create this group savings that you typically do in cash among families. And there's one thing that resonates with us.
You have a group, a pool account where everyone can. Oh, that's
so
really cool.
Right now, we are very, really focused in just removing borders.
Okay.
So this huge concept of borders is not just in the physical world, but it's also in the financial world, and it shouldn't be that way.
Mm.
Why? Why the remittance was so tough? Why it was so costly? It was cumbersome, complicated. Why just opening a bank account? Just, you know, why? Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be that way in 2023.
This is a story of you have to have started this company because this isn't a company that I could start. I wouldn't understand it. This is a company that I probably could try to start and I'd fuck it up, right? Like you need the life experience. You need to have the emotional experience of trying to actually do this thing yourself, you know, having a credit score elsewhere, trying to open a bank, having the headache of doing that and going, okay, you know, let me test this amongst a group of friends, right? And let's see if this thing is real. And then you build a team of actual people who have had this life experience and obviously your background. And then it's like a secret recipe. This is one of those things that if this was in a Harvard case study and you had all these guys from, you know, Boston and New York looking at it, they'd say, oh, this is a huge opportunity. And they'd fuck it up. They'd blow it up because they don't have the specialized knowledge, the life experience, the emotional experience to actually pull this thing off. I think this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, well, it's definitely feel, you know, there's some joy in just trying to solve a problem that one has, you know, personally lived through. So
build it for yourself in a sense, right?
Yeah,
first.
Yeah.
You've got backup from some of these badass incubators. You've got some backups from some of the smartest guys in town. What happens now? You know, you've assembled, how big's your team now?
10
people. Okay. So you have your core, you've got your core unit where everyone's busting their ass right now trying to scale this thing. What are the iterative points now? What happens? Like, what's the next step for you
so,
guys now?
The first phase was, bringing the gang together, just making sure we had a great team. And I cannot be prouder of just being part of that team. Every single one of them is just amazing. And it feels and the vibe in the team, it's great. That was number one.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it was, well, let's build something that people want, right? Mm-hmm. And we launch in 2021, end of 2021, and we started just gaining traction. And thankfully, it skyrocketed. And now we have kind of like this, you know, check mark saying people want this.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is actually something people want, 600 people like. And in fact, people are putting on their direct deposits without any incentives.
Mm.
And that's the holy grail of banking,
mm-hmm.
right? Just having this product as your a card or a checking account as your top of wallet.
Basically paying a lot less to acquire that customer. They're just saying, hey, I just want this thing.
Exactly.
You know, you don't need to run some crazy promotions. I put $100 in your account just for you to sign up, whatever it is.
No organically, no incentives. Yeah. So, and that speaks, I think, to the brand piece of the thing, right? Because now you got to do cheaper, faster, less risky or less, you know, costly than ever, right? So, now we have this. So we said, let's do this. Now let's take it to the next level. Let's double down. So now we're working on growing in terms of in terms of from a technical technological perspective, we're
basically to handle just more throughput, more
correctly
hands in the system.
We are going to be able to launch bank accounts from mass affluent customers from outside the U.S. soon. Okay. That's hopefully within 2023. We are looking into the credit piece or the lending piece, mm-hmm. where you're going to be able to apply for a product with your historical credit score.
Yep.
And one of the things that has us a lot, you know, very excited is the small business piece. Okay. We just launched the small business product, and not focused on small business per se, but mostly on the end customer, which is the employee
okay.
of that small business. It turns out so many small business, Hispanic owned small businesses are completely underserved.
Uh-huh.
So payroll has been obviously an area of opportunity mm-hmm. that we've identified, because our customers started saying, hey, now I have my debit card, my employer is still paying me in cash. So we said, of course, let's fish upstream. Then mm-hmm. we went to the small business and we said, why don't we open you a small business account?
Right.
And they said, okay. And then that turned out into merchant cash advance and things like that. So, you know, I
there's
think
there's a predictable cash flow that you have from a small
and
business.
You're right. And the retention is bigger. The CAC or customer acquisition cost is lower. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it has been very YC-esque in the terms of just put something out there,
mm-hmm.
get feedback, iterate on that. Don't do a product roadmap.
Right.
We do not have a product roadmap per se.
Okay.
We just do product development cycles every other Friday.
Okay. So a sprint, hey, this is the feedback. Let's try this.
We pick a KPI okay. and we say, this is the KPI we want to move. Okay. How are we doing in it? Okay. Like this. So two, what are the things we want to do? So everyone puts like a drawing board and everyone sticky notes, everyone virtually.
Yeah.
We start doing like every wish list, everything that you might want to have, either from engineering to the full team.
Okay.
Engineering, marketing, product design, everyone just starts putting stuff in there.
Okay.
Then we decide hard, medium, or easy.
Yep.
And then what's going to impact this?
This is the ICE. It's called the ICE method. It's like implementation cost and effect on the business.
Something like it. And uh-huh. then you decide, okay, what's going to impact the KPI, whatnot, okay. in front of everyone else.
Okay.
So what gets picked goes into the board.
Okay.
To the sprint. What doesn't stay there, creating this
forever, you know, longer entropy, list of
yeah. entropy list or whatever right. things that cause stress. Like, oh my God, so many things want to do. No, the person who proposed it
uh-huh.
has to propose it again.
I see.
On the next
That's
one.
Great. So you don't have this like long trail of just
no.
things that never got done that get a mile long.
Which, by the way, cost a lot of stress in the engineering team. Because when you're an engineer and you feel like you have a roadmap for the next year or so,
you just see all the work yeah. sitting in front of you, right?
Yeah. That's horrible. So, yeah.
I mean, I could see that. That would be terrible. It's like, it's funny because I have my own checklist and I try to refine them over time. But yeah, there's, you start to say, hey, dude, why is line item number 28 still on your checklist? If you're never going to do it, it's not that important.
I know.
I might start doing that and just tossing things to the side. It's yeah. probably would be a good move. So do you guys have like this is my own nerdy question that I want to know. Do you have some dashboard? You have just, everyone's watching some dashboard. Everyone has internal metrics. Like, how do you decide what KPI that you're trying to move? Like,
no, that's a very important question. Like, yeah. we chose one KPI, which is front and center, and we have a Slack channel where that automatically comes from Amplitude, or what serves our data, and it's literally automatic every day at 7 a.m. We all get this notification saying yesterday's TPV.
Okay,
and we chose total payment volume as our main KPI.
And this is the payment volume through your entire ecosystem.
Yes, correct.
That's your metric that matters.
That's MTM. The metric that matters now.
Okay.
And probably we might switch KPIs eventually. Let's say maybe TPV per user or mm-hmm. per active user
mm-hmm.
or MRR
yep.
or GTV. So whichever the metric is, we have an automatic notification on Slack that says, hey, team, this is yesterday's number.
Okay.
We do have the stand-up ceremony, the typical sprint stand-up ceremony, which is usually just engineering teams.
Okay.
We have it for the full company since we're just 10.
Okay.
So even in fact, CEOs never go to the daily stand-up because the job of a CEO is not the nature of just tickets and stuff, but I still go there.
Right.
In a sense of just maybe injecting to the team this little fresh view of how am I seeing things?
Yeah.
And what's the mindset for today?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'd be terrified not to be in those meetings, those early meetings.
I know. And by the way, I do customer support every time I can, and that's very important. And that's how I started my career, actually. Back in my first job was customer support through internet banking.
Okay.
And I enjoy that so much because you can actually hear what your customers are saying. You can actually get a sense of what people really want. Mm-hmm. So, and I encourage the full team, not just a customer support team, to answer a couple of messages here and now.
Yeah.
Now and then.
Yeah. I mean, 9 times out of 10, you know, I'm in the chat bot. I'm the chat bot with a this person does not exist AI face generated. That's not me. And I'm sitting in there responding to, like, for my AI company, I was in my chatbot for a full month, just making sure that we had all of the questions in there, all of the problems, all of the bugs, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, you know, you hear about on social media, you know, the founders of Grubhub deliver burritos every once in a while. You know what I mean? If you're not touching your business, you start to get too distant from it. And I think you lose your edge. And if you're going to open a delivery business and you're not willing to deliver burritos, dude, you should probably try something else.
Yeah, I know. And by the way, right. And just a quick shout out to everyone who's trying to start something up. Please beware of a startup stories because they typically tend to get romanticized and you just get to see those pretty pictures. It's not. So if yours is not, then that's okay. I mean,
none of them are pretty because we sit here in this room and I don't ask for the pretty. I ask for the real and the scrappy, and where these ideas come from are, it's usually a combination of life experience, a little bit of luck and some, and a little bit of the crazy that we talked about, like, hey, maybe I could take a risk on this. But the having real interactions with customers is probably the most important thing that you can do. As smart as your tech is, as beautiful as your UI UX, it's like, are you talking to people? Are you giving them what they want? Because if you're not, nothing else matters, right?
I know. And you just got to keep at it, right? And just do it every day and just, you know, never lose focus.
So now that you guys are basically, when you have a team of 10, every single person is critical. Mm-hmm. What's the next growth step for you guys? Is it, hey, we need to start acquiring more people. We need to start getting the word out about Pana. Or do you have one of these solutions? Hey, we want to make sure everyone can open a bank in this amount of time. What's the next big milestone for you guys?
Well, one of the things that we need to obviously be completely, you know, aware of is the banking stack or the banking world has a couple of things that are regulatory, right? Mm-hmm. So as we grow, we need to keep growing our compliance and operations piece, which is critical to scale up growth. And that's obviously on the radar. Mm-hmm. Growing on the small business side takes a little bit more of people on the ground rather than just 100% digital.
Actually have people knocking on doors and stuff.
Yeah. And at least until it picks up. Right. So, okay. And I'm one of those, by the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we scale and as we keep growing, we got to keep listening to the customers. We have this huge, you know, conceptual North Stars, which is help solution problem A, problem B, or problem C. Mm-hmm. But eventually it will be up to the customer to tell us what they want. What's the route? Listen, when you get comfortable as an entrepreneur with uncertainty and with living on the edge, you can actually enjoy. I'm having the time of my life. Mm-hmm. I cannot. That's the truth. I've not been able to say that all of my life. I honestly can tell you, I have my family, I have my kids. I that's most important thing in my life. I'm able to enjoy this with them. I have this dream company I always wanted to have, and I'm in that moment. That can all get distracted and disturbed, or kind of like interrupted if, you know, the business goes down, right? Sure. So, you know, it's very important to, you know, be completely comfortable, or at least as comfortable as you can, with that uncertainty, and just, you know, try to level those out. But yeah, it's a roller coaster, I'd say, at the beginning, right?
But your priorities are in line. You basically just, I have these two characters. I've got the rich guy and I've got the really rich guy. And you basically just aligned yourself with the priorities of the really rich guy, because the really rich guy says, hey, I'm taking risk all day long. Okay. I've got to be nuts to be doing all this thing. You know, I've got payroll in the millions, right? And the most important thing to me, relationships, friends and family, making sure that we're adding value, not saying, hey man, you know, I'm just trying to build this thing, cobble together and sell it as quickly as possible. You know what I mean? There's a vision here. There's some connection to you here, and you're keeping your friends and family close, which makes this journey, I think, a lot more manageable.
Someone asked me the other day, hey, you got to prepare for the worst. And I said, I think we've got to prepare for the best. Mm. Mm-hmm. What if the best comes? Right. What if we end up signing that huge agreement, that huge, you know, deal that they're mm-hmm. after? What's going to happen then? Are you actually ready for success? Are you actually ready for that success that you're actually wanting and preparing for? Are you really prepared to be a billionaire if that's what you're thinking? Mm-hmm. Are you really prepared to be this huge, mega, I don't know, NGO leader or whatever, whatever you're planning for,
right?
Even if it's being like the, you know, the best priest there ever was, are you prepared to be that?
That's awesome. Are you prepared for when it works out?
Yeah.
Because we spend as humans probably 90% of our time just detailing the road to failure. We're like, okay, so when this doesn't work out, I'm going to do this. And if that doesn't work out, I'm going to do this. And then on my last $1,000, I'll be able, okay, did you do that same map the opposite way? You know?
Exactly.
So I just have some family and some friends who've recently had a huge exit. Okay. And I'm kind of watching what they're doing. And it's interesting because you can tell they didn't necessarily think it was going to happen as fast as it did. Yeah. So they kind of don't know what to do, in a sense. They're like, oh, I don't, what do I do? What do I like? I can kind of do whatever I want now. What do I actually want to do?
I know.
So it's a great exercise to say, hey, okay, you've doubled down on what if it goes wrong, but what if it goes right? How many people think about what it looks like when it goes right?
Yeah. If it goes wrong, probably it's not going to even matter if you prepared or not.
Right.
So yes, you got to have some, obviously prepare for unknowns and mitigate risk or whatever. But man, got to prepare for what if it turns out.
Right.
In fact, it's like when you never have free time, right? What if whenever you have free time, do you remember what you wanted to do when you didn't have the time for it? So
yeah.
What about having a list of saying, when I'm free, these are the things that was
that I like to do.
Yeah.
And that takes some serious thought and consideration. How much time do we actually get to just give ourselves the luxury of thinking about, hey, what do I actually like to do?
Yeah.
And this has been something that I've been wrestling with recently, because I'm like, you know, what do I actually like to do? Because recently I've just completely stopped with the drinking, with the partying. Like, that's just what everyone quote unquote likes to do, right? We live in Miami. And I'm like, well, when I'm not doing that, which I just don't do, and I'm not finding interest in doing it anymore, I'm like, well, what do I like to do? Yeah. You have to ask yourself that question. And I'm getting some really interesting answers. I think everyone should go through this exercise.
You know what you should do? Imagine that, you know, there are a couple of crazy ways of doing this exercise. I did it once and it helped me a lot. It's your last day of living.
Uh-huh.
And you get asked, okay, so in this 24 hours, how do you want to spend it? What do you want to do
right
in this 24 hours? They say how you spend every day of your life is pretty much going to end up how we live you the rest of your life. So, and I said, okay, first 4 hours, I'm going to party.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2 hours at least.
Okay.
I'm going to have fun.
Uh-huh.
But the other 20, for 20 full hours, I just want to have all of my loved ones right next to me.
Right.
Just chit-chatting, laughing, drinking, just being with them.
Yeah.
and hugging them and kissing them and just with my loved ones. So my takeaways was, so that's how I need to spend most of my days.
How can I organize my life around that?
How can I organize my life around that priority?
Right.
And this is the same way I think about many other stuff. Like, my dad was not around when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
And I said, and I saw my friends with their dads, and I was like, I want this. Why can't I have this? So I said, okay, how can I be the best dad? So I said, so this is my uncle number one. And this is my friend's dad, his example number two. So I took like three role models and I said, why can I cherry pick from this guy, from this guy, from this guy? And I said, I shaped up what I believe to be the perfect father figure or model. And actually it turned out for the best not having my dad around, because I believe it has made me a much better dad to have, you know,
Got to build your own.
Build my own.
Uh-huh.
That actually works. Sometimes we have a great father figure. You just copy paste everything you get.
Right.
And the perfume doesn't smell the same to everyone else. Right.
So
I said, why don't I, you know, cherry pick or pick and choose whatever the things that I really believe are going to work for me. And that's how it worked out.
What are the things that are working?
When you
build this role model, what are those features that you're
from a dad?
Yeah.
Oh, well, first of all, you don't have to be this boss figure. You can be the cool dad and be respected.
Mm-hmm.
You can, a lot of dads in my country tend to try to miss out to have more free time.
Mm-hmm.
That's stupid. You gotta try to be more with your kids. You gotta,
a private life.
Yeah, you gotta, the way you treat your wife, the way you do so many things, and you balance out all the things that, you know, typically go wrong with fatherhood. And anyway, being present was the main one, obviously. Just cherishing those moments. And definitely I feel so happy I follow that path, because if there's thing I enjoy, it's just being a dad. It's my thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you structure life at Pana and life at home? Hey, from this hour to this hour? I know that can't be the truth, so I'm just saying, throwing out some stupid options. How do you do it? Because I let my businesses seep into every single aspect of my life. I'm pretty bad with priority right now. I also don't have a young family to sort of remind me what's more important yet. How do you do that and execute a huge strategy like at Pana?
So, one of those father role models was my father-in-law. And so my wife comes from a beautiful, homey type of structure, and she has been very helpful in just helping to put up this structure that really works and that, you know, separates time to be with family.
Meaning you've got some things you do. You do a dinner, you have a weekend
dinner,
thing.
Whatever. So every day I put my kid to sleep. There's some things I do regardless of whatever's happening, but also just be there when you typically say, this is a good time to read, or this is a good time to golf or to relax or whatever. That's stupid. This is a good time to be with your kid.
Mm.
And you know the concept of net present value.
Mm-hmm.
Do that with your kid. For instance, if you go and play golf on a Saturday and then say, well, after I play golf, I'm going to be with my kids.
Right.
That's option A. What if you spend, like, by the way, your kids are going to be up since 7 a.m., okay? So what if you spend from 7 a.m. hardcore playing with your kids till 10, then you can golf. And it's completely different story.
Yeah.
And it's much more good time now than a, you know, average time later. So, you know, there's some hacks. For instance, I went to listening to podcasts and audiobooks instead of reading physical books.
Okay.
When I realized I had to choose, I wanted to do exercise, I wanted to go to a gym and work out in the morning at 6, 7 a.m. or even go bike riding.
Okay.
But I didn't have time to read. So I said, boom.
This is a solution.
Yeah. I got used to reading or listening and exercising at the same time.
Okay.
So that's the thing I made time for or took it off my list. So I think eventually you can find hacks that are going to help you make it work. But you gotta take a lot of time to think what do you want? That maybe has something to do with what makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
with what drives you, what's not going to out of destroy you.
Is there something that you're learning from your kids and from your family that there's this constant learning or maybe this constant priority reset?
Yeah, I mean, in the end, you know, I just want to be happy as much as I can, many days as possible. Being with my kids is a reminder of a little bit who you are, really, because they all have something, a little bit of you in them. So you actually see an aspect of yourself, mm-hmm. either good or bad, from another perspective. Like, mm-hmm. oh my God, that's my, and so, right. So it teaches you a lot of...
A mirror, almost.
And you got to be, you know, pretty more coherent. And yeah, I think it helps you be a better person if you decide to.
Right.
A lot of the things that you in life, it's a decision. Marriage is actually a decision.
Uh-huh.
Happiness is actually a decision. It's actually a choice. Do you choose to be happy? Do you choose to make a marriage work? Do you choose to be a good dad? I think it depends on what's important to you. Mm. Like, remember, my dad was not around, so I wanted to have, that was something I wanted to work on.
Right.
So depending on what your priorities is, you're going to build up towards that.
I think there's the common perspective when you're in this growth mode that you will be unable to balance family life. You would be unable to balance having a deep connection at home. That's just not only the stereotype on Wall Street, you know, it's even the MDs who have been there for fucking 20 years or still don't ever see their kids. You're kind of saying that that's a choice too. You can choose to not make the time for this, and you can, and if you do, you can pull it off. And the rewards are enormous.
Yeah, you know, but listen, by all means, I've not been, you know, successful or anything that I can, you know, relate to that big Wall Street guys that are, you know, living a hectic life. And it really gets tougher every day. So I can really project that it's really tougher by the minute. But what I do know is that whatever your circumstances, you can either be better or worse than the average.
You can operate within your boundaries.
You know, it's ultimately, you can choose a lot of things. Hopefully one is as successful as they want it to be and still make time, but I know it's going to be tougher. Mm-hmm. That's true. But I believe that, you know, you can be non-average whenever you choose to.
And a lot of this is taking things away as opposed to putting things in, where you're saying, hey, you know, I can take something away to get more. Like you say, I can take this thing away and have a better day. I'm personally trying to work on that because I just say, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. And I look at what I'm doing. I'm like, how the fuck are we going to pull this shit off? I'm doing 100 different things. At what point do I start to say, well, is there anything that isn't work that you want to do, Nick? And it's a constant review process. So we'll see if I ever figure it out. But right now I'm experimenting with a lot of different things. Like I'm taking these principles, right, that we talk about through these characters that I've built. By the way, I built these characters completely as I didn't even know what I was doing. I just said, oh, okay, I guess I'll be the guy that makes faces on his phone for a couple of days. And those characters through my audience, I learned from my audience that these characters had principles. This is what the rich guy stood for. This is what the really rich guy stood for. And then I thought, well, this is starting to get pretty interesting. I'm developing almost like a matrix for one way to live and another way to live. One way to live is that there's never enough. And then the other way is that there's infinite amount if you can give, right? And so I've distilled this thing into a book, and we're selling the book, so with a major publisher. And so I'll be sitting down. By the way, you don't write a book, nonfiction, and sell it. You actually sell the book with a proposal. So you basically outline the book. You sell the book based on that. And then you go write the book. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the hard part is selling the book, obviously. That part is done. But now I'm like, all right, I got to go write the book, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to go write the book. So I'm just, I'm mapping out like, okay, we got the podcast. We got the other businesses. And I'm going to have to go Stephen King mode at some point and just... go and write this book.
And you know, it's you know, it's as hard for character A than it is for character B proportionally. Like, you know, when we talk about money, what does money mean for someone with X amount of net worth or struggling versus someone with a lot, mm-hmm. right? The problem and the joy, if any, feels the same. You know, proportionally mm-hmm. speaking, they're still human. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a different reality. But we should understand, no matter how much money you have, that shouldn't change your principles. Mm. You shouldn't be someone else. You should have the same principles and the same values regardless of how money, mm. much money you want. And that's easier said than done. But when you start having money, it brings out who you really are, mm-hmm. right? It augments that, but sometimes it changes it. I think, you know, we should encourage society to understand that what you see on Instagram, what you see on the headlines of people with this, you know, lavish lifestyle, whatever, they are no better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. If you have more money or less money, it doesn't make you even better or worse, or you're not, you know, you're not different. You're just still the same human being. I love the universe, by the way. I love like this whole cosmos, this whole, you know, theory around, you know, big picture kind of stuff. The Pale Blue Dot, for instance, mm-hmm. from Carl Sagan, is one of the most beautiful poems in the world, where, you know, there's this tiny, when you look at the big picture and stuff, you consider why we're here, mm-hmm. how we got here, the miracles that happened for us to be here. Meteors, the Big Bang, and life, and the cell, and the multi-cell organism, and race, and so many millions and millions of coincidence, so we can be here. Mm-hmm. That not only we're taking for granted, right. but we are fighting about the color of our skin, and our background, and how much money we have, in this tiny microscopic Earth in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And
we're all practically glued together from that vantage point.
And that's crazy when you look at that big picture. So I think we need to encourage people working harder and making, you know, and whatever, making more money if that's what they want or whatever. But we need to compartmentalize being identified with how much money you have. Mm. It doesn't make you better or worse. You're still the same human. And you can still thrive for success, because in some cultures, success is frowned upon. Mm-hmm. You're going to have that much money. And why?
Where the jealousy is more prevalent than the admiration.
Dude, you should be able to fight for what you want, work hard, make money. And if you make a lot of money, if that's what you want,
right.
that's okay. That has nothing to do with who you are. If you don't sure. want that, if you just want to make whatever you want to just to live normally, that's uh-huh. okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's a personal choice.
Yeah.
And part of what I do is I try to show that everyone in the Instagram culture has it backwards. All you see, you're seeing everything reversed. You see the Lambo, you see the whatever, the house, you know, the house in Beverly Hills, or, you know, out here in Miami, but you don't see what the person did. Right. And so most of the time they've done something really great. They've added value at scale to get but all you see is, and of course this can be manipulated. You've got the lifestyle influencers who get the Lambo without having done anything, right? And they, to make you think that they've done something. Cause ultimately when you see these, what I call these side effects, right? It's like, oh, well, I want that. But nobody on Instagram is actually saying, hey, well, the reason I have this, dude, isn't because I, you know, there's folks that sold courses to get that, and that's just not the right way to do it. But no one's saying, hey, man, the only reason I have this stupid thing is because I built an office supply center and I sold it to, you know, Home Depot for $100 million or whatever it is, right? Like I busted my ass for 30 years. I sold this office supply center and now I just kind of have to drive a car and figured, well, I can get a Lambo, so might as well have a, you know, we've lost touch with these toys and the Instagrammable moments and the value and the hard work that you had to give back basically to get it. And for the most part in the US, that's a true story, you know?
Yeah. I think we're the challenge now is adding filters. And what I mean by filters is the following. My mom was trained to get as much information as she possibly could. And that was the goal. So every time she sees something on the web, she's like, ah, I got more information.
Okay.
So now she's victim of all this fake news, of this algorithm.
You mean she's obsessed with the news cycle.
So the confirmation bias stuff, it's, you know, it's to that generation, it's working beautifully because, or pretty bad if you put it some way, because they were trained to get as much information possible.
Yeah.
Not pick and choosing what's real and what's not. Right. So for our kids, we got to train them to filter. We got to train them to say, you're going to have an excess of information, you know, too much information. What you need to do is choose and, you know, be critical about what is real, what is not, what's good, what's bad, what's true, what's fake.
Right.
So that those are the filters that are going to be the game changers. Because in the end, if you just keep consuming everything, it trash in, trash out, right? So I think the goal is, how can we teach this new generation how to filter and discern what's between what's A and what's B?
Right. What happens when you are involved in the constant news cycle or the constant bombardment, you have no time for you, right? So you have no time to work on you when you're reacting to the newest story, when you're reacting to the newest whatever the heck is going on. There's always something going on. You don't have time to ask yourself the question, hey, what makes me happy? Hey, what the hell do I actually want to do? You know, if when you're in this constant reactionary state, which social media is basically designed to keep you in this lurch, you just find yourself going, huh, it's 9 o'clock, time for bed. Huh, it's 10 o'clock, time for bed.
Yeah.
I haven't thought one fucking moment about myself today. I've thought everything about every world issue, every horrible thing that's going on, and I never once just asked myself, do I actually like what I'm doing? Am I happy? Am I doing anything like meaningful for me?
Yeah.
You know, it's noise that's so loud, it drowns out your own interest, your own calling out inside of you. And
you know,
hey,
what
a heck of a drug, man.
Yeah, I know. You know what I think the next VIP treatment is going to look like? 100% offline.
The true ballers are offline.
Yeah.
True ballers.
Like, let's go to this hotel, and premium VIP treatment means completely offline.
Yeah.
That's going to be VIP. You get no cell connection. You know,
right.
You get no Wi-Fi.
Your phone in at the door.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it. I mean, look, people are already doing this, right? Concerts, certain events, they're saying, hey, you're not laughing as loud when you have a damn phone in your hand. You're not laughing as loud when you're filming my performance on your stupid iPhone that you're not going to watch anyway.
I know.
So, hey, we're just going to take this out of your hands. We're going to show you how to go back in time a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to lock this up in a little safe little locker. Yeah. You'll get it back. Don't worry. I'm right there with you. You want to start that company after, you know.
Chris Martin in a Coldplay concert I went a year ago. Mm-hmm. He said, guys, everyone, put down your phone. Put it away for a second. This next song, let's enjoy it.
Right.
Dude, you have no idea what was like.
The energy just went whoop,
boof. It was crazy. Everyone just enjoy that song. It sounds silly. That's how we typically used to enjoy songs a couple of years ago. But he said, put your phones away. And I think it was the most memorable song of the concert.
Yeah. and you start to get a little spiritual there. You're like, was that because I wasn't looking at my phone? Or was there some magical, energetic moment of just a lot of people paying attention?
Yeah.
That moves the room.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know either.
But it worked.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And it's just, if you're a musician, it's kind of good for business. You say like, hey, you're going to enjoy this more.
Yeah.
You jackass, put your phone down.
Yeah.
And then you're going to come to another one because you enjoyed it more. It's like a good retention strategy, as much as you know, people don't want to put their phones down.
The reason I went into banking, the reason I went into insurance, the reason why I went into investment industry was to learn all those key aspects and make sure we have a stronger background to build a great company that could actually scale to that better, faster, more efficient. And for this time around,
it sounds like you're on your way, man. I'm excited for you. I appreciate you coming on and making some time with me before your trip down to Argentina. And, I'm looking forward to seeing what you build and what you grow, and I'm absolutely certain I'm going to see the impact down here in Miami. So thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me. I've, you know, had a great time, and, we're excited, and I hope to give you some feedback in the near future. So
I'll be here.
Thank you.
That's a pod.